So we are going to continue with dynamic risk management.
Thank you, Hans. Good afternoon. Agenda paper four. The purpose of this paper is to provide you with both an update on the current status of the project and an analysis of the feedback received from the agenda consultation. We don't have questions for the board, but are happy to take any questions you might have. Starting with a brief update on the current status of the work on this project, approximately a year ago, the board agreed that the work on this project should consider constituent information needs concerning an entity's dynamic risk management activities as a basis for determining how we might approach recognition, measurement, and disclosure. This route has proved to be challenging, and we have also started work on recognition and measurement. This, however, does not represent a shift in the objectives of the project because this remains to develop a comprehensive solution that includes recognition, measurement, and disclosure requirements. As a result of focusing on recognition and measurement, we have held an unlimited number of meetings with European banks. The purpose of these meetings was to better understand the bank's activities concerning management of net interest income and its accounting. This discussion gave us an opportunity to enhance our understanding of how those banks model their core demand deposits. In particular, we have learned that banks consider customer behavior mainly in the process of identifying the core part of those demand deposits. And once the core part is defined, banks typically construct replicating portfolios for the purposes of measuring the interest rate risk inherent in the funding source. And the terms of that replication portfolios of core demand deposits, for example, the tenors, coupons, numbers, width, and of tranches, are often a reflection of the bank's risk management or the bank's board strategies and their view on the yield curve, rather than being only a reflection of customer behavior. We think that it would be worthwhile to develop this learning further as we consider the way forward. And as a matter of fact, in the next few months, we will participate as observers in a process led by EFRAG, in which some European banks will be interviewed with the aim of gaining a better understanding of the key drivers and parameters used in their core demand deposits modeling. In relation to the feedback received in the agenda consultation, these are our main observations. The project is received as being of high importance by the majority of the entities for whom the project would be of relevance: banks, bank regulators, and representative bodies of financial institutions. Apart from dealing with an aspect that is key for these entities, interest rate risk, some of these respondents also provided other reasons. For example, there is currently a disconnect between risk management activities and how they are reported. In this respect, the project is relevant to providing more transparency and more meaningful information. Another reason is that the project could address problems encountered when applying fair value hedge accounting for a portfolio hedge of interest rate risk under IAS 39 to dynamic portfolio hedges. Another reason provided is that the project is an integral part of the wider IFRS project, and there is a need to bring this to a conclusion. And another reason for a high importance of the project is that this project is seen as an instrument to address the carve-out, and a European securities regulator stated that in the European Union, it is often unclear whether entities have used the carve-out or not, because the information is often not disclosed. The remaining types of constituents have mixed views. Views from non-financial respondents are mixed. Energy and commodity entities, for example, are of the view that this project has a high importance. These respondents typically do not agree that the scope of the project should deal only with interest rate risk. They think that the accounting requirements in IFRS 9 are insufficient to meet their needs. However, entities in other industries, such as healthcare, do not consider that the project has a high importance. Insurance companies typically share the view that the importance of the project depends on the final outcome of the insurance contract, on the insurance contracts project and its interaction with IFRS 9. Standard setters, their views are also mixed. The majority of standard setters based in Europe think that the project has a high importance. Some standard setters based in Asia and Oceania are of the view that there is no urgency in proceeding with the project, because it might be useful to defer it until IFRS 9 has been implemented to help gauge how the project should progress. Standard setter based in Africa rated the priority of the project as high and stated that the work should focus more on simplifying and adapting the current requirements in IAS 39. Accounting firms also mixed views. Those that think that the project has a high priority has mentioned the interaction of this project with the adoption of hedge accounting requirements in IFRS 9 as one of the main issues. In this respect, an accounting firm stated that the board should provide a clear vision as to when and how it will require entities to adopt the general hedging model in IFRS 9 within the foreseeable future, if completion of this project will be delayed for a protracted period. Another accounting firm expressed the view that it would be helpful for the carve-out to be resolved in order that a clean transition from IAS 39 to IFRS 9 can be achieved. The rationale provided by one of the accounting firms that does not think the project has a high importance was that the board should allow IFRS 9 sufficient time to be implemented and apply in practice before any standards level activity on dynamic risk management is carried out. Looking at the responses by geographical region, in general, European constituents tend to give the project a higher importance. And this finalizes the presentation of the paper. We are happy to take any questions the board might have for the staff. Thank you.
Thank you, Mariela. The importance of this project, I think, has grown over probably the last year. And one of the single biggest reasons, at least for banks, financial institutions, but insurance companies as well, is the prospect of negative interest rates. And one of the things that I would love to be able to see is kind of a simulation or illustration of the effects of negative interest rates on the net position that is, in theory, macro hedged. And what happens, you know, with the various components of a portfolio, whether you have largely fixed or floating rate, you know, instruments, what is the so-called behavior of the core deposit intangible? You know, if interest rates go negative, do I take my money out of the bank because I'm going to get less than what I put in and buy a safe and stick it underneath my mattress? In which case, there isn't a whole lot of value to that core core deposit. So the question, I guess, is, you know, what are the effects look like under the approaches that we're talking about here? And it, in my mind, we're kind of shooting in the dark. So, without really, in a sense, a comprehensive effects analysis, you know, of what this looks like under various interest rate scenarios, I think people are probably not sure what, in fact, they'd advocate or what they wouldn't advocate. But from an information standpoint, I think a lot of investors would like to know what the effects are on the net position of a financial institution, you know, depending on whether it has more of a floating rate book of mortgages, fixed rate book of mortgages, whether they're funded more with time or demand deposits, you know, what the nature of that funding is and how confidence sensitive it is. So I actually think that it's growing in importance, but yet in order to really come up with, I think, good disclosures and good, you know, principles around this, you need to see the effects of various approaches on a balance sheet. You know, we've talked about this in other projects where we're kind of dealing with the piecemeal and looking at this issue and that issue. This, to me, is a classic example of the revised standard setting approach we've talked about, where you really need to look at the effects of a proposed set of principles on a balance sheet as a whole before you can come to any conclusions. But in terms of importance, it's no surprise to me where the level of importance is coming from. Obviously banks, obviously from certain geographies where the risk of negative interest rates is higher. So I think that's the way I would guide you going forward.
Martin?
I think the feedback on the agenda consultation demonstrates there is a high impact, and for this really, who are concerned about that, which are banks, and mainly banks in Europe, because they really using this kind of core demand deposits, including that in their risk management strategy. But for me, the key question is not, is it still, maybe the impact is maybe higher with negative interest, I don't know. But it is really concern of this kind of people who are impacted by that. But the key question is, do we find really a solution for that? And therefore, I think we have developed, when we first said, okay, maybe we should focus on disclosure, but I think disclosure will not solve the problem, because I think we have this kind of mismatch problem when people using derivatives and hedging that, and the key question is, do we find really a suitable model really to solve this problem? I think we have to concentrate in the next, I don't know, 12 months or 6 months looking for that, because I think at a certain point of time we have to decide what we should do, because as also mentioned by them who giving us feedback, is we still allowing IAS 39 hedge accounting rules, don't require IFRS 9, and we have this portfolio exemption, and we have the carve out, and therefore I think there is still a need to further work on that. And as we heard from people who are impacted, the people think it is necessary, because okay, we don't still have a complete solution for that.
Martin, you mentioned core demand deposits. They're not really unique to Europe, are they? Most banks.
They are not unique to Europe, but I don't know if maybe the risk management strategy is different, because otherwise I don't know why it is so high regarded in Europe and not in other jurisdictions.
Oh, that's why I asked the question.
I don't know.
Can we go?
On the same topic of the short term, where we will have a situation where preparers can have a choice between IFRS 9, IS 39, with or without the carve-out, i.e. three solutions, and this is alluded to in paragraph E on page 6. I assume that in our, need to be refreshed, but in our standard, the choice between IFRS 9 and IS 39, chapter 6, will be clear, that the disclosures will be required. Yes. What might be missing, and we probably cannot ourselves deal with that, is whether or not it is IS 39 with carve-out or without, because it's outside of our remit to decide what to do when a jurisdiction does apply a carve-out. Now, I was wondering whether IS-1 might be a solution. I assume that the choice of how you do hedging is an accounting policy decision, and whether it is full IS-39 or whether a modified version should be disclosed under IS-1. Is there a way we could remind preparers, and maybe we can talk to regulators as well, that whenever they apply the carve-out, they should be clear and transparent about whether or not they do it and how they select alternative accounting policies, and that should fall under IS-1, disclosures of significant accounting policies. To me, it seems obvious, but maybe it needs to be reminded to some preparers if they currently do not comply with that.
You're talking more about the carve-out when they're applying it, and what are the disclosures that come?
Yeah, what happens is that when they are faced with application of IS-39, they may decide to use the carve-out, which says paragraphs XYZ do not apply. It's an accounting policy decision not to apply the full IS-39. Then there is another accounting policy decision to apply other alternative ways to do hedging. This is where transparency is needed. But I think that IS-1, the requirements, basic requirements, when we talk about significant accounting policy decision, I guess this is significant for a bank, should require preparers to disclose what they do in lieu of the normal IS-39 rules. So I think we could probably bring it to a discussion with regulators, so whether it is us reminding people that IS-1 does require, and them enforcing that, might be useful, at least to solve this short-term issue of having three different situations for hedging.
Amaro?
Thanks. And just a brief comment first on the use of core demand deposits in outreaching financial entities in Brazil with Kumar. We've heard loud and clear that at least the ones we've talked with, they all use core demand deposits in their risk management. So it's responding to you, Ian, it's apparently not only limited to Europe. Other maybe more sophisticated financial entities do already use the core demand deposit, and this is key. And actually,
and do they, are they interested in?
Yes, that's what I also mentioned. When the Central Bank of Brazil, and I was responsible for that, when we introduced the portfolio hedge for financial entities in Brazil, we add the core demand depositors, even because inspired by the then IS-39 for banks in Brazil, core demand deposit is already permitted in the national gap for banks. So they have been doing this for almost 15 years now because we implemented IS-39 soon after that. And they are probably having to, when consolidated under IFRS, they had to cancel the effect of the core demand deposit in the hedge strategy. So it's in the national gap, but not in IFRS. I think it's a short and very good paper. I would like to thank staff for that. It's a very good summary of where we are and the challenge that lay ahead of us. And it just, I think you identify the key considerations very very neatly here, and was somewhat mentioned by Martin, the key priority is really to enhance reporting of risk management, interest risk management. And just a comment in addition to what you have here. So I understand the EFRAG exercise is aimed at European banks, and of course makes sense to understand their practices. And you mentioned the comments from users on paragraph 7. And it's really, really, really mixed. And since inception of this project, I've always struggled to get, in when discussing this, what the users really want or they at least expect to get from MacroHedge this project. So reading the two items as in paragraph 7 here, I think necessarily after this EFRAG exercise, we have to try to get more from users because it's not really clear to us up to this moment.
Okay. In terms of the user's view, in the comment letters to the discussion paper, we believe we received a clear message from the users of financial statements. In summary, their views were they are interested in how, say, each entity such as bank is exposed to interest risk. They are also interested in how the future NII is would look like. Also, they are interested in the generation, how NII is generated. So for instance, they want the information decompose the effect of interest rate risk or compensation to credit risk. But again, the user's view in the to the comment letters is, discussion paper is, they don't have a strong view where and how they are presented, or profit or loss, OCI, or footnotes. So we received a clear message, but they didn't have a clear message about how and where it is presented. As far as the comment to the agenda consultation is concerned, very unfortunately, no users of financial statements gave a specific comment. Only for the online survey, some of the users gave us comments, okay? But we struggle to summarize their views, but on the high level, most of them see this issue is very complicated. Okay, so they are doubtful that we are, of course, ideally we can develop a comprehensive accounting approach, that is good, but we are doubtful that whether we can do it. So, but they, as they want good information, some of them mentioned disclosures. Yeah, that is the best.
Thank you.
Mary.
A few thoughts and reactions, and Mariella, thanks. I think it was helpful to have both pieces here, the update, important context for the feedback. And one thing that the update made clear to me is that, not surprisingly, at this point in time, I think we do not have enough information to make a decision about what the next step is. Is it DP? Is it ED? Is it, you know, drop the project? All of those, I think, you know, possible outcomes, but I think we need to get more information in order to make that step. So I'd expect us to continue working, on this project, looking ahead to the context of it being presented about the agenda consultation. I think it will be, I hope that it is, and I useful to gather the information from financial institutions by observing the EFRAG outreach on that. So I think that's a good next step for more data. To Philippe's comment, I guess I have some skepticism about whether we should invest any time in trying to improve either application of or disclosure about use of the carve-out, because that's not part of IFRS, although it is, you know, an interesting comment. Although if we have that from the securities regulators themselves, I don't know that there's a lot of value in playing it back to them. But, you know, if it's a message we heard from others, I would imagine we'd relay it. And then the last thing, it was actually part of your update, and what you learned about modeling customer behavior for the core demand deposits. I just wanted to ask you to say, when we had the DP and the feedback from the DP, I struggled a bit in this area because there seemed to be something that was tangled up that I couldn't get. And I think the additional work that you've done has explained that the financial institutions are looking together at both the modeling of the customer behavior in terms of figuring out which part of the core demand deposits they think are sticky,
yes,
and which part are not, but that they then integrate that with their actual interest rate management. And that's when it becomes entity specific. You know, it is it becomes more entity specific in terms of business strategy. And a question that I have for you, doesn't need to be answered now, is there any signal that they, in their view, they cannot separate out the modeling of the customer behavior from their application of their risk management strategy for the interest rate exposure? Or is it that they don't want to pull it apart and, you know, explain separately what their expectations of customer behavior are and how they're managing it, maybe because they think it's commercially sensitive?
Jim, how do you want me to take it?
Yeah.
To answer your question, Mary, I don't think I can give you a short answer on this. So I think, in a nutshell, going into as you did last time with the punchline, I think you could split it out, but I don't think it would work for risk management. So what they're doing is when they're looking at their customer deposit, one, as you rightly put it, they're determining through modeling, which is customer behavior, how much of it is sticky. Question arises is under the new environment, whether those same assumptions or the same time series data holds or not, but that's a different question. Negative. Once they've determined how much they have available, then they overlay their risk management and views of their interest rate positions to determine how they are going to use it for risk management. So you have, let's say, $1,000 of cash, which is going to be with you for the next 20 years because it's almost infinite. So then they're saying, okay, then I have assets of 5 years position. How do I match this 20 years and keep rolling it? That is based on their view to some extent and the interest rate curve, the exposure at a point in time. So I think they're quite interlinked. It's difficult to pull them out separate.
Okay. But also, I don't think they're really, per se, trying to model behavior as such, are they? Isn't it really all about how they're going to manage the interest rate risk?
Yes.
Is their view on
that? Let me clarify that.
They take into account behavior to work out how to manage the risk, but it's not really, this is exactly how we think behavior works.
You see, the only part when we're looking at it is customer behavior is your stickiness, right? That's the only bit of the modeling that they're saying how much of this thing will be here. After that, it links into how they're modeling their interest rate risk and everything. So I would say the element of customer behavior modeling is the base layer which they're determining. What the tenure and what rate they're hedging is based on their interest rate.
And for those of us who are still in kindergarten with dynamic risk management. I think when it's a time when we're getting not an update, but the discussion about what the research findings are, it would be helpful to relate that finding back to some of the alternative approaches that were identified in the discussion paper and what the implications of that additional insight are for what might work and what might not.
Maybe if you need to bribe a funding source, that it might be a 0% funding source, and also it can be repaid tomorrow, but it might stay for 20 years. So they have to find out what is the stable part of this funding source.
Yeah.
And apart from that, then they have to model other features of this funding source, which is the tenor. And they need to, because they need information to price this funding source, they replicate this with other instruments that they know of.
Right, but I got that the model customer behavior becomes the basis for creating the replicating portfolio. But I need somebody to help me connect the dots in terms of saying, what does this mean for the models that we were exploring when we did the discussion paper for how you would report the effects of dynamic risk management? Don't need it today, but that's what would help me when we come back to discussing this further.
Philippe, as I understand that you suggested to investigate or learn more about what the actual disclosure the banks are now doing, selecting among the three alternatives. And I have two questions. Whether you mean the day one selections or the continuous disclosure, first question. And second, if the second, whether you mean we already have disclosure requirement, you suggest to investigate how they actually disclose the impact of selected the options. Or alternatively, there's no disclosure requirement or clear disclosure requirement. You won't know the actual disclosure practice.
I know there is a concern expressed by some in this paper. So I think part of the concern will be addressed when people will apply IFRS 9 and choose whether it is IFRS 9 hedging or whether it is IAS 39 Chapter 6 hedging. That is a disclosure that I think we require. Yes. Now, there is an additional concern. If they stay with IAS 39, is it with or without the carve-out? Did they use the carve-out in the past? Will they start using the carve-out from that date? I don't know. Do we need to do anything here? I think a speech is enough to remind people that it is a significant accounting policy. And I think we can take it with regulators and say, look, if there is a concern, it is more your job than our job to enforce IS1. Because I don't think IS1 does need to be changed. It's just a reminder to people that you could expect a bank to explain how they do hedging. It is IS39 or is it something else? Is that something else? What is it? It's a no-brainer. It's just a reminder. And that we don't need to take any standard setting action, I think. At the time when IFRS 9, or even earlier, comes into force, a reminder that it is useful to investors to know what kind of hedging policy the bank has. So, and I was not calling for any standard setting action. It was more for appropriate time to just put the flag up and say, look, it's important.
Okay.
Just one.
Yes.
Last question. Anyway, there is it possible to invite some expert who can explain the risk management activity and some kind of a portfolio replication hedging currently being done in the bank? So Mary said that she's in the kindergarten, but in our case, I've been before the kindergarten. I have no good knowledge, so. So some of the board members have some kind of a introduction or some lessons on this kind of weird activities. But in my case, I didn't have a chance. So if this project is becoming more important after our consultation, then maybe as Martin suggested, we might not get to a concrete conclusion. So he's suggesting a kind of a disclosure solution rather than having a kind of another thing. So maybe if you go to a more effective solution, maybe such kind of a practical education might be a very good idea.
Unfortunately, this project's gone on so long that we've got a situation where the education that we did originally has been forgotten because we've got so many new board members.
Right.
Because we did all of this. Yes, we got banks in who gave us a big all-singing, all-dancing explanation of risk management.
In all fairness, I think she's right. Also with the turnover of the board members and also given the lapse, one of the things, assuming this goes on after the agenda consultation, is we will start with education sessions for the board, who and how we will plan as we go there, generally, because we've been through the EFRAG outreach is also happening. But that certainly is something before we, if this comes back for discussion, we may expect you to make decisions. We certainly have to bring you up so that you can understand it.
Most likely that. Those bankers have been replaced as well.
As with the staff here.
Maybe we have it on tape somewhere, along with our webcast, well, you know, archive.
I'm sure I can pull out the PPT.
Let's see.
This EFRAG work on modelling core demand deposits, what exactly are they trying to get at with the core demand deposit modelling? To my mind, there's two things here. You can model core demand deposits in order to get them into a fair value hedge within the carve-out. Or you might want to talk about modelling core demand deposits because you might hope the ISB might allow them in a fair value hedge at some point. Or you can model core demand deposits within your current risk management strategy, which to my mind is understanding your overall net interest income position and its variability in the future according to changes in interest rates, and obviously your position regarding your funding, including core demand deposits, is an integral part of that. And I think there's a difference between them, because in the first case, you're trying to model the core demand deposits as some sort of term deposit, fixed rate term deposit, and you get a fair value change. In the other one, it's merely a component of the overall net interest income position and the variability. And I'm just wonder what exactly people getting at with this.
I think the objective of the exercise is a fact gathering exercise to provide us input that we might use in the next public document that we might publish. So I don't think there is an intention to cover a specific objective for accounting purposes of core demand deposits. They know that core demand deposits is a key element in any accounting model that we might end up developing, and they know that this information that they might be getting from all those banks might be important for us in order to develop the next document. So I don't think there is a specific accounting treatment objective in their exercise.
Can I just embellish a little bit? Yes, I agree with Mariela. There's no accounting objective that's been set up, Steve. So the first two options, in my mind at least, and also looking at the questionnaires, don't exist. What are you doing with the carve-out or how we could bring it in? So the fact is, as Mariela said, it's focusing on what you're doing for your risk management. But certainly, let me caveat that, the objective of the exercise is to help us build an accounting solution. So it will feed into number two, whether it can help us build an accounting solution for this.
My experience of being in many meetings on this is that it's so easy to talk past each other on this subject because people approach it from different perspectives and they think the way they do it and the way they document it internally is the only way of doing it. And you've got to be very careful, I think, in these types of meetings.
Okay.